Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, November 26th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Twin Cities residents protest the Ferguson grand jury decision. Ramsey County will tear down two St. Paul buildings, and the legislature has to fix the Destination Medical Center law. In cities across the country, demonstrators took to the streets yesterday to protest a St. Louis County grand jury's conclusion not to indict the white Ferguson, Missouri police officer who shot and killed a black teenager. In Minneapolis, more than 1,000 protesters shut down Lake Street at rush hour before marching up and down busy Hiawatha Avenue. As Matt Sepik reports, the protests were peaceful, but a woman was injured after being hit by a car.
Hands up! Don't shoot! Hands up! Don't shoot!
At 3 o'clock sharp, hundreds of people responded to a call issued on Facebook to gather at Kauffman Memorial Union at the University of Minnesota. Some carried signs reading Black Lives Matter. Others held up pictures of Michael Brown, the 18-year-old man Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson shot to death last August in a confrontation. Adriana Foreman of Minneapolis says she's been following the news about Ferguson since the shooting happened and wanted to make her voice heard.
I was tired of being on Facebook. I wanted to do something, so I got out here and I did it.
Hamza Musay, a 21-year-old junior studying political science and African American history, echoed the opinions of nearly everyone demonstrating when he said the grand jury's decision not to indict Wilson was disappointing but not surprising. Musay says he hopes the Ferguson incident and the months of protests will help Americans realize that people of color often face unjust treatment from police.
This is an opportunity for our community, for the black community and other minority communities, to teach about what it is to be subjected to the sort of injustice where you're not given a second thought when you're killed by law enforcement.
Musay and the growing group of protesters marched across campus, then doubled back, squeezed onto trains, and headed for the 3rd Precinct Police Station in South Minneapolis. They met a crowd that had already formed at Lake Street and Minnehaha Avenue, a busy commercial intersection. Even for a police station, the law enforcement presence appeared light. Police wore their regular uniforms, not riot gear, and there were no armored vehicles. As Chief Janae Harto promised on Monday, officers helped guide the protest. They blocked traffic on both Minnehaha and Lake, but not before a driver hit a woman. Video shot at the scene indicates she fell underneath the car's front bumper and was pushed several feet. Several people pounded on the vehicle as it drove away. Minneapolis police spokesman Scott Soroka says the woman's injuries are minor and the driver eventually contacted police. After that incident, the demonstration resumed peacefully as protest leaders took turns with the megaphone. Rose Brewer, a professor of African and African American studies at the U, said the death of Michael Brown has become a defining moment for many Americans in their teens and 20s. Brewer says she plans to study the documents from the investigation that St. Louis County authorities released this week, but she says the secretive proceedings of the grand jury up until this point didn't serve the public's need to know what happened.
The kind of lack of transparency, the ability to selectively match facts to evidence, that should raise plenty of question in our mind about what we're dealing with here.
Justice for my crowd is justice for us all.
At a separate protest in St. Paul, more than 100 people marched west down University Avenue from the state capitol. Among them was 49-year-old Bill Scadden of Maplewood, who said he couldn't muster an opinion about whether Darren Wilson was justified in shooting Michael Brown.
Honestly, I don't know enough about the facts to decide one way or another if it was the right thing to do.
Scadden says he took part in last night's protest simply to call for peace. He says both police and citizens resort to violence far too often. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
A Twin Cities business landmark will soon be coming down to make way for a new riverfront development in downtown St. Paul. Ramsey County okayed a plan yesterday to tear down the old West Publishing buildings more than 20 years after the company left them empty. Tim Nelson has a look at what's next.
West Publishing moved out of downtown St. Paul to Eagan in 1992, and it left a hole the city has struggled to fill. Deals have fallen through for decades. West ultimately sold its former headquarters to the county for a dollar. A condo development fell through in 2008. That's despite some spectacular views. The offices were built into a downtown cliff starting in the 19th century. They tower up to 10 stories over the river and look over Harriet Island.
That location is probably the single most attractive site in the Twin Cities, particularly given its location on the Mississippi River in St. Paul's Entertainment District.
Patrick Sieb is executive director of the St. Paul Riverfront Corporation, a nonprofit set up to promote redevelopment in St. Paul.
By making this site available and clear, it really positions it for probably the most powerful development we've seen in years here in St. Paul.
For lack of any other buyers, Ramsey County has been using the office buildings on the site for itself since the 1990s. Public health, elections, property taxes, family court, and other county functions all found homes there at one time or another. The site also includes the old county jail, which was abandoned for a new jail across town in 2003. The buildings have been totally vacant for the last 15 months. Part of the problem? The seven-story cliff between downtown St. Paul and the river. Bruce Thompson is the director of property management for the county, and says that's made tearing down the buildings especially tricky.
What's unique about the buildings is the way they're pinned into the cliff that runs along Kellogg Street. And in a number of different places, especially the Adult Detention Center, it is actually pinned back into the cliff with several 15-foot rods.
Adding to the complication, the site is a mashup of seven different buildings built between the late 19th century and 1979. They include a former refrigerated warehouse, a printing plant, and the old jail. Kellogg Boulevard actually runs on top of parts of the site. Ramsey County Board Chairman Jim McDonough says the county has struggled to find anyone to take on such a daunting rehab project.
To take on the risk of what it takes to tear that building down, that's a risk that we need to share, and we always knew that we were going to have a responsibility for that. It was important to get ahead of that, again, to send the message, we are ready for that development.
McDonough says that's why Ramsey County commissioners have voted to sell $11.5 million worth of bonds to pay for the demolition. The county estimates the site could put $150 million of new development on the tax rolls, and McDonough says that could pay millions of dollars of the county's tax bill every year. For now, though, there aren't any firm plans to build on the site. County Commissioner Rafael Ortega says it has the potential to fundamentally change the character of St. Paul. He represents the area and says he'd like to see a mix of affordable and luxury housing. He'd also like to pair the nearby River Center and XL Energy Center with an upscale hotel to help attract conventions and other events.
We don't attract the kind of business, you know. It's like most of the conventions go to Minneapolis, and I think that's part of the energy we need in the city and in downtown to create that vibrancy.
The demolition is expected to start next summer. The county hopes to have the site cleared and ready for building in April 2016. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The state, the city of Rochester, and the Mayo Clinic are in the initial stages of the biggest economic development project in Minnesota's history. But moving the Destination Medical Center forward hinges on a tiny tweak legislators have to make this session to a law that outlines how the project will be funded. As Catherine Richard reports, politics could get in the way.
On a below-freezing day in November, a road crew is sawing into a downtown Rochester thoroughfare in an attempt to move a natural gas line. Jobs like this are expected to multiply in the home of the Mayo Clinic as the result of a multi-billion dollar public-private partnership called the Destination Medical Center, or DMC for short. But the work may slow in the coming year because of a dispute over the interpretation of the law that authorized funding for the project. The state has committed $327 million to the DMC to improve infrastructure like roads and sewers and to build parks as the Mayo Clinic expands. But the legislature made that cash contingent on $6 billion in private investment. And that's where this dispute comes in. Earlier this year, the Minnesota Attorney General's office issued an opinion that effectively said the Destination Medical Center would need double the private investment to tap state money. Rochester area legislators are calling for a quick fix when the legislature meets again in January. Republican Senator Carla Nelson worries that without a fix, the project will come to a halt.
It's absolutely essential that we have a swift, clean fix or correction to the technical language about the Destination Medical Center. Behavior of investors and investments. They love good news. They can adjust for bad news, but uncertainty freezes.
Republican Representative Greg Davids from nearby Preston will chair the House Tax Committee next year. His committee is in charge of tweaking the language, and Davids says he wants to do it shortly after the 2015 session begins. But Davids says a quick fix may not be so easy.
Anytime you bring a bill on the House floor that has to do with taxes, it could become a Christmas tree. You could have more lights and bells and whistles put on that tree than you could imagine. If I get on the House floor and there's amendment after amendment after amendment to get political this thing, I'll just pull it back. Then it's not quite so simple, is it?
Rochester city officials say the unclear language in the law is creating problems for their upcoming budget, which will be written and approved in December. Right now, the city plans to allocate only $3 million to staff costs associated with the DMC work. Rochester's assistant city administrator, Gary Newman, says money for development projects is on hold until the city has reassurances that the state funding will come through. The city can amend its budget to include more project funding after the legislature makes the fix, and the DMC will still move forward on a development plan in the next few months. But Newman says conversations with developers looking to invest in Rochester are in limbo.
We've had significant development interest from private parties. Those will basically be on hold until we also get this issue resolved. So it affects not just the funding that the city will provide, but it also will affect the private investment in the community.
Meanwhile, Greg Davids says he's eyeing a bigger fix to the DMC's overall funding mechanism, which partly relies on new tax dollars from the city and the county. Davids is worried that it's too big a financial burden for Rochester and Olmsted County residents. He prefers Mayo's original proposal that used additional revenue created by DMC development to pay for infrastructure. David says he won't bog down the funding fix with a plan to adopt Mayo's original proposal, but that he'll hold hearings on the issue next year. Catherine Richard, Minnesota Public Radio News, Rochester.
That's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom, hoping you have a wonderful Thanksgiving and a great weekend, and I will see you again here next week.